Chief, if I were surrounded by 6 or 8 of these things, would I stand a chance with them?
Well, there's no problem. If you had a gun, shoot them in the head. That's a sure way to kill them. If you don't, get yourself a club or a torch. Beat them or burn them. They go up pretty easy.
The Pseudopod Autopsy. Welcome to the Pseudopod Autopsy, where we dissect the best in horror cinema. Slasher movies, intimate personal apocalypses, giant monsters, ghosts, it really doesn't matter. They all weigh the same on the slab. The Pseudopsy, Eight-Legged Freaks. There are times when high art is everything, where the discussion and exploration of ideas and character lies at the heart of a truly great story. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and, more recently, Changeling and Gone Baby Gone all take this approach, and it's one of the big reasons for their success. Of course, sometimes you do just need giant mutant animals. Dean Devlin, Roland Emmerich's long-term producing and writing partner, co-produced this, and it's interesting to note that a writer who has such a clear love for old-fashioned SF would champion a project like Eight-Legged Freaks. Definitively small-scale, where his previous work has been epic in scope, it's actually oddly similar to both Independence Day and The Day After Tomorrow. All three films hark back to an earlier set of traditions, and all three cut the reverence they clearly have for those traditions with modern sensibilities. Independence Day has a clear social conscience and a sense of jingoistic national pride that you can choke on. The Day After Tomorrow balances environmentalism and political cynicism with waves of super-chilled air that can be outrun by half-starved high school students. And Eight-Legged Freaks has a jet-black sense of humour, a cheerfully nasty streak, and hundreds of massive spiders. The plot is a neatly handled combination of comedy and horror, following Chris McCormack as he returns to his hometown and his father's long-abandoned mine. Chris is great. Everything about him screams, tortured hero, from his goatee to the Americana rock playing as he steps off the bus. What really makes the character, though, is the fact he's played by David Arquette. Arquette is at his absolute best in roles like this, the American everyman who is so earnest, so sweet, so committed, that you almost miss the twinkle in his eye. He gets the joke, and crucially, he understands that for us to get the joke, he has to pretend he doesn't, an unusually complicated piece of acting for what should be a relatively simple film. He's surrounded by one of the best supporting casts the field has seen so far this century. Carrie Wuerer is effortlessly good as the local sheriff, balancing her at times implausible good looks with the same sense of humour as Arquette and a physicality that harks back to Ripley, Sarah Connor, and Buffy. If anything, she's the next stage of the process begun by those three women, a lead character who is female instead of a female lead character, any hint of a gender or drum beating lost in the skitter and giggle of the spider horde as they sweep across the town. Scott Terra, as her son Mike, is one of the best and least well-known child actors in the field, bringing a self-deprecating intellect and humour to the role. Likewise, Scarlett Johansson as Sam's daughter Ashley is completely invested, her intelligence and wit shining through here as it would in The Prestige and much of her later work. It's the next tier down of the cast, though, that sees the film really shine. Rick Overton as Pete, Sam's luckless deputy. Genre stalwart Leon Rippey as the town's would-be tycoon Wade, and the magnificent Dougie Doug as Harlan, the local conspiracy nut, are pretty gold almost every moment they're on screen. Overton is a wonderful, luckless, hangdog figure who sells many of the film's goofiest moments without even seeming to try, whilst Rippey's self-righteous and self-deluded businessman is a great foil for Arquette's two-fisted hero. It's Doug, though, that steals every one of his scenes. Proud, self-righteous, over-intellectual, massively articulate and charmingly paranoid, Harlan tops and tails the film, utterly vindicated by the town's night in hell, and convinced that no one is going to forget about it in a hurry. Of course, though, the real stars here have eight legs. Massively enhanced by a chemical spill. What else? I mean, radiation would be stupid. They set up shop in Chris's old mine. Jumpers, trapdoor spiders, and a dozen other species leap and lumber through the film with a malicious joy not seen since the Gremlins movies. The film makes no bones about the lunacy of its premise, and even imbues the spiders with definite personalities, squealing with terror, giggling, and in one superb moment, stalking one of the town's distinctly grumpy old barbers by creeping up behind him in a tent. They're physically imposing, a constant and real threat, and at the same time, they never once take themselves seriously. These, when it comes down to it, are giant, chemically enhanced monsters that enjoy their work, and that's just not something you see every day. Co-written by US TV veteran Jesse Alexander and Ellery Alkayem, who also directed, Eight-Legged Freaks is a modern B-movie in the best possible way. There are no surprises in the plot, at all. Seriously, no brave new narrative ground broken, and if there were, it would be so much less fun. As it stands, eight-legged freaks can stand with Tremors and Slither as proof that, much like the chemical and radiation-enhanced monsters that lie at its core, the B-movie will never quite die. And for all the horror and death the spiders bring with them, that can only be a good thing.
Well, that's pretty hard to say. We don't know how many of them there are. We know when we find them, we can kill them.
Are they slow-moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.